Tim and Sid. So funny, you might pee a little. Luckily, you can listen on the can. Subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher.
Normally, you celebrate the winners. Congratulations, St. Louis Blues. Congratulations, Patrick Maroon. But Brian Burke, I think what stood out for you last night was a goaltender in Dallas.
Yeah, Ben Bishop turned in one of the best goaltending performances you're going to see in your life after suffering a really nasty-looking injury in Game 6. He came back and just stood on his head. He was awesome.
Pat Maroon in, appropriately enough, period 5. John Shannon, what do we have tonight?
Tonight, I'm expecting another chapter in the evolution of number 29 for the Colorado Avalanche as they go to San Jose to play Game 7 to win the second round. This is a night where Nathan MacKinnon can actually go to another step of being that other guy from Cole Harbour.
Potential signature moment. Watch that one. CBC and Sports at 9 o'clock Eastern. Hockey Central goes at 8:30. Nick Kypreos joins us in a couple of moments. And with that, Hockey Central at noon is on the air.
Live from the Sportsnet studios in downtown Toronto, this is Hockey Central at noon on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Here's your host, Jeff Merrick.
I mean, guys, really, it is right out of Sports Central casting. The St. Louis kid who takes less money to play at home, offered up around the NHL, no takers, wants to play at least one season in front of his son, who was there as one of the stars of last night after two periods of overtime. Patrick Maroon scores the OT winner, and St. Louis advances. You mentioned Ben Bishop off the top, Brian Burke. Your thoughts on Patrick Maroon and your thoughts on the St. Louis Blues and the story that just won't end.
Well, I hope people have noticed, some of these analytics people have noticed that the big teams are all still, the teams that are playing all have some size element to them. And Patrick Maroon, I'm guessing, is a lousy analytics player, but he's been an effective player in this playoff. And St. Louis guy turned down a multi-year deal from New Jersey and went back and played for less money to be around his son in St. Louis. And has scored a couple big goals in the playoffs, but none bigger than last night. So, good job. He did a good job in that game.
You know, John? I've known Patrick a while. Patrick's an emotional guy. Always sure has been an emotional guy. Yep. In tears when he was with the Oilers in St. Louis, scoring a goal in front of his son, which was a huge moment for him.
Right.
He said last night in the interview for Canadian television with Sean Reynolds about how important it was that his two line mates turned his season around and got emotional about that. And to me, that's a real indication of what this St. Louis Blues team is as a group. The hug with Berube at the bench after the game, that tells you that the St. Louis Blues have created something special. And a guy like Patrick Maroon, who sometimes can be a little bit on the outside, has become one of those core guys. It's fascinating to watch.
You know, one of the stories there, I'm glad you referenced it as well, you know, more of a cohesive group. I mean, the stories that we heard at the beginning of the season about that St. Louis Blues bench, the arguments, the yelling, the screaming, not getting along, a team that was in complete disarray. And if you're watching on sports and you see what John's talking about, the Patrick Maroon hug with Craig Berube.
I think he's going to get a contract. I'm not going out on a limb and putting it on Twitter, but I think Craig might be the next coach of the St. Louis Blues.
You think the interim tag is being removed?
If it isn't today, let's get Army on the phone and ask him tomorrow.
Well, let's not forget, too, that it was, I want to say 3, maybe 4 years ago, Craig Berube was interviewing for jobs in Germany. And here he is as one of these stories behind the bench this season in the NHL, Brian.
Yeah, and I think he's a kind of coach that not overly technical, but understand he can do the blackboard side of the game. Whiteboard, I should say, now we're in hockey. I'd like to kill the person that invented whiteboards, but he can do the X's and O's part of it. He's a smart hockey guy, but that's not his strength. His strength is, first off, we're going to play this way. You want to play more, play better. You want to play more, work harder. All no entitlement, all achievement, all merit. And we're all going to work. It's not going to be, you know, we used to have a saying in Anaheim, hard work gets you nothing. In other words, it gets you no praise. It doesn't get you noticed. It doesn't get you more ice time. It's expected. Hard work gets you nothing. We expect that. We're entitled to that. And I think they've got that mentality. Doug Armstrong did a really good job of putting together a blend. They were physical enough to win. Goaltending was good enough to win. Defense is underrated, and but that was this team. I wouldn't want to play them.
No,
whoever's coming out, and they've been on this tear since January. It's not like they just started playing well.
So, to that point, Brian, Driveline Baseball has a documentary where one of the points about it is to your point, hard work doesn't guarantee you anything other than an answer to this question. And the question is, how good am I? And the question now becomes, we've seen two rounds of the St. Louis Blues. Since January 2nd, 3rd, we've seen what the St. Louis Blues team has been able to achieve. So here's the question. How good are they? Kiprio, standing by.
Yeah, I think that, you know what, the two things that has happened that, as I see it is Craig Berube said, you know, we got to stop thinking that we're a fast team. We just got to play St. Louis Blues hockey. And there's a great deal of simplicity to it, to Brian's point. I think that that's a big part of it. The other guy I probably feel doesn't get very much credit for being a guiding light in this is Steve Ott. You know, Steve Ott is one of those guys.
That's because we all hate him too much to say nice things about him.
But I think Steve Ott's one of those guys that when they move Berube up, Ott got a few more responsibilities,
yeah,
and there seems to be a real, real attention to detail that he's helped with.
As a lawyer, I have to state that I agree with your position, but I will not take it publicly. And Steve, of course I'm kidding, but everyone knows what a pain in the ass Steve Ott was to play against.
Well,
what a heart and soul guy.
And imagine being a coach. And I mean, if he can bring that pain in the ass attitude to being a coach, the St. Louis Blues will benefit.
And that is a compliment. With that, we'll bring in Nick Kyprios from Hockey Night in Canada. Nick, we'll start off with the question I just asked the fellas. Here it is. Nick Kyprios, how good are the St. Louis Blues?
Really good. Really good. And it's so funny when they started in October and November and everybody said they were too slow, right? Remember that?
Yep.
Get rid of these guys. Maroon can't play in the league anymore. He's too slow. And When Berube came along, he started putting in the belief that they're going to be a puck possession team. We're not giving the puck away. We're not shooting it at bad angles and turning the puck over and coming up the other way. So it was all about puck possession. And whether you play fast or slow is irrelevant if you have the puck and you keep the puck. You can play as slow as you want, as long as you don't give it up. And they don't give it up. You watch Bozak, Maroon, and Thomas last night, and they'll cycle you to death. And it won't matter. It won't matter if you think that they're playing fast or slow, because as long as they have the puck, they're in control. And they were fantastic last night throughout the whole game. And lo and behold, who gets the game-winning goal? You just knew it was going to be that line.
Mm-hmm.
And Maroon's a great player because Craig Berube has put a system in where it plays to his strengths. His strengths are 6 feet off the wall. His strengths is protecting the puck, having great balance, making plays. And then when you get your high percentage play, you take it to the net. And that's what happened on the game-winning goal. Now, I heard you guys talking about Craig Berube a little earlier, and do you think for one second that Doug Armstrong wouldn't have a contract already done with him and he would take the chance of this guy going to free agency?
Because
I got to tell you right now, they're stroking some big checks in Edmonton. And I wouldn't dare, if I'm Doug Armstrong, not have a deal in place right now for Craig Berube to be my coach next season. So don't even think he's going anywhere, and don't even think that they're going to talk after the season. Talk's over. This guy's the coach.
Interim tag coming off after the playoffs.
I think that's right. Nikki, my understanding is they've agreed to wait, and they're going to, and it's going to end up costing St. Louis some money, but you're right. They're going to get it done hours after their final game. No question.
Hey, Nick, the story that you talked about puck possession, the story that kind of gets lost in the overtime goal and then the goalie duel between Binnington and Bishop was that the Blues held Dallas to 4 shots on goal through the second and third period.
Yep.
And that, you know, that puck possession becomes the best forecheck you can get, doesn't it?
Oh, they're so good at it, too. And they're big, they're strong. Dallas had no answer. Well, they did have an answer. And then and then he broke, and that's Ben Bishop. And he was fantastic, but it would have been a shame, and it would have haunted the St. Louis Blues for a very long time if they would have found a way that an unlucky bounce would have cost him the series. So the good news, John, is that the right team's going on.
You know, in all of these series, and as the playoffs go on, and John just talked about Nathan MacKinnon a second ago, and now this year's edition of the Stanley Cup playoffs has cemented him in that conversation of the great players in the NHL. But there are always those players that become the breakthrough guys that jump to fans' attention in the playoffs. Jacob Slavin, we think about in Carolina. When you look at the St. Louis Blues, and on that final goal, so much great work is done by Robert Thomas. Yeah. You know, right? He's a right-hand shot, lines up on the left side, swoops around the circle, gets a shot, hits the... He was fantastic the entire series, Nick. I would even argue their best player in the last handful
of
games.
And last year at this time, getting ready to play in the Memorial Cup.
100%. Helped Hamilton win the Robertson Cup in the OHL. Your thoughts on Robert Thomas, Nick?
Oh, gosh. I don't know if you were watching last night, but I couldn't stop talking about him last night.
Yep.
And he's still a teenager. As you guys said, Memorial Cup... you know, 12 months ago. So he's a smart player. With and without the puck, you can see it and how calm he is and how strong on his edges. He took Klingberg right to the boards. I don't know if you saw Klingberg's reaction on the game-winning goal, but he knew he bit going wide and then Thomas cutting into the middle. But it's just, you know, if you really dissect that Blues hockey club, it's more than just the household names of Tarasenko and even Ryan O'Reilly. I mean, I'm looking now and I'm seeing Barbashev. I mean, this guy plays hard. Sundqvist, he plays hard. You know, Dunn with limited minutes. You know, he's starting to skate to me and he's looking like Josh Morrissey more and more as he comes up the ice.
Just lost Nick on his phone. We'll try to get him back.
You know, the interesting thing about a guy like Barbashev, and you remember him from his days in Moncton.
In the queue, yeah.
There was no way that he was supposed to be a two-way player like this.
No.
He was a 50-goal sniper. He was going to the net. He wasn't in his own zone very much, and he's learned after a couple of years to play the game properly and doesn't play a lot, plays 13, 14 minutes a night, but he does actually contribute a lot to that hockey club.
We have Nick back. Nick, we lost you after you were talking about Ivan Barbashev.
Yeah, just these guys now are the depth guys for St. Louis. And then you got Steen, who's happily accepted a limited role, not a frontline guy anymore. I mentioned Dunn skating up and down the ice, reminding me of Josh Morrissey now taking charge. And his minutes are going to continue to go up. So the key in all of this, of course, is Binnington and the way he was able to come through again. And you thought maybe going into the second round now, game six, the bubble going to burst on him. And you know, he still finds a way to stay so calm, even if you heard his post-game interview after the game.
Oh.
I mean, he's not only expecting to win, he's expecting to win the Stanley Cup. This is where he is. Between the ears.
Nick, I always believe we should send off the other team properly, too. So let's talk Dallas for just a couple minutes. I mean, Ben Bishop, obviously. But this was a big leap forward for Dallas. No one expected they'd get in, you know, play in the second round in a double overtime game seven. A lot of different players stepped up. Heskinen has become a household name, a guy we didn't know much about before.
Mm-hmm.
Hintz has you know, he's a guy that no one talked about at all going in, and he was a key player in the series. They've got lots to look forward to in Dallas, and they had a great year. And Jim Montgomery, I think, deserves some praise. He did a good job.
Yeah, like St. Louis, it got off ugly. We know where management and ownership were on at the beginning of the year with guys like Ben and Sagan. They got challenged harder than any other athletes I've ever seen when it came to a president or an owner, but they handled it very well, and they were able to rebound it into a fairly decent run. They're getting closer. Zuccarello, I thought, was a great pickup.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm sure the Rangers are disappointed that they didn't turn their draft picks into first rounders with Dallas advancing. But I tell you what, it really looks like Zuccarello's not going anywhere.
Yeah, they could still, Nicky.
Extension.
Yeah, they still could get the one. The one caveat there, yeah, if Dallas wins last night and they go to the conference final.
He's going to resign.
But if he resigns, that becomes a first rounder in 2020. So
my understanding is he will resign.
So then the Rangers will get that first round pick.
You're right. They'll get one out of the two.
Right. It just won't happen this year when the Rangers already have two picks in the first round. Would have made it a hat trick. The big boys are for the Dallas Stars. Ben, and man, he almost ended it last night. Sagan.
If he had a bigger curve on his stick, he would have ended it last night.
He's got the Ovechkin blade. Who are we talking about today, St. Louis or Dallas? Ben, Sagan, and Radulov, 4 goals in the series. This was, to your point, Nick, a second ago, the success of Dallas in the second round, getting to that game 7, were the unsung guys, not necessarily the big boys.
Yeah, and much like Tampa a few years ago, their American Hockey League team, that's all about development. You mentioned Hintz, Dowley, Dickinson. Those were key guys, and that's the only way you win championships is when those secondary guys find a way to step up. So they'll be fine for the next few years. They'll keep adding pieces. And Klingberg, wow.
Yep.
That's a defenseman, too. Last night was fun to watch John Klingberg getting up and down the ice. He could have ended this series in Dallas's favor all by himself.
Klingberg was 36 minutes. Heiskanen was 35 minutes. And Esa Lindell's, you know, he was another 33 minutes. So that's a pretty good core group of D-men to work around in Dallas.
For sure, John, and Dallas will be just fine moving forward.
Let me ask you, because you mentioned John Klingberg there a second ago, and he's unique in a lot of ways around the NHL, but one way in specific. Remember talking to Tyler Seguin about this on the podcast with Elliot. Unlike many, if any, defensemen around the NHL, Klingberg isn't shy about sending them in high from the point. It's something he did internationally with Sweden all the time. Wouldn't be a heavy shot, wouldn't be a hard shot, just put it in there as goaltenders go down. The way to get it through is to put it up high. Not sure if we still... Nick, you still there? Can we just
I am, buddy.
Oh, there you are. So
I'm good.
Can you recall from when you played a defenseman, much like Klingberg, who wasn't shy about firing him in, not low, but high, because Klingberg does it more regularly than anybody that I've seen in the NHL of recent note?
I played with two of the best in Leach and Zubov. And... you know, Zubov is going to be a huge, he's going to be a Hall of Famer as early as next season. But Klingberg reminded me a little bit of Zubov last night, the ability to do so many good things, hold on to the puck, stay calm, slow things down when he wanted to, and join rushes. So, I mean, that would be the type of guy in my era that I could compare him to, Jeff.
Tell you what, there were two very interested viewers last night. I can almost guarantee it. David Poile and Kevin Cheveldayoff, because the Central Division is not getting any easier. And when you think about Colorado coming around and playing as well as they have Dallas and St. Louis doing what they do. We've always thought about Nashville and Winnipeg. I know they're not this far in the playoffs, but we've always thought Nashville and Winnipeg were the two gems of the Central Division. All of a sudden, that Central Division has gotten tougher again.
You want to talk about Chicago a little
bit,
too?
Well, I think Chicago's on the rise as well.
Agree.
So all of a sudden, the Central Division has just gotten stacked again.
Well, John, look at the Central Division and rank them in terms of who best has managed the salary cap and who's got their stars locked in for another few years and who's in trouble. That's all you need to know looking forward in that division.
That's all part of the viewership.
before we get your thoughts on tonight's matchup, another Game 7, back-to-back Game 7s, great night on CBC and Sportsnet, Sharks and Avs. Your thoughts on, and you guys talked about this yesterday, but your thoughts on Ken Holland, officially named general manager of the Edmonton Oilers. If you're Ken Holland, of course, you got to find a coach, but as far as roster construction goes, Nick, if you're Ken Holland, what do you think your first move is here, or some of your first moves are?
Well, Ken's got to put together his team. And Brian can speak to this more than anything, is how much pressure do you feel that you got to change, make changes for the sake of making changes? And how much do you feel like, you know, I don't have to appease the masses here? And, you know, you look at Edmonton right now, and there, some of that fan base is so scorned that you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. People are still sitting there questioning that Ken Holland's too old, way past his time, hasn't done anything in 12 years. Why him? They would have got a young guy with zero experience. They would have poo-pooed all over him as well. You can't win. You can't win. So if that's the attitude, then the first thing he's got to do is shut out the white noise, right? And just go about your business, find out who's in that office right now and who has value, who doesn't, and move on from there. But there is no race here. If you have to miss the playoffs again next year, and you got to let some of your prospects overcook, like Jones or Benson, mm-hmm, or Bouchard, you know, and depending where you sit on Puljujarvi, if you got to get rid of him or you want to keep him for another year, see if you can turn him around. But do not be in a rush here. Do not let those people tell you that you have to make the playoffs or go to the second round. I know Connor McDavid's itchy to go back there, and I know there's a ton of pressure. But if he starts bending to that pressure, then he's not truly doing his job.
Your thoughts on that one, Brian? I mean, that is one of the things that's out there. We saw the frustration after the Vegas game, the Connor McDavid interview, and you can see it in his face, you can hear it in his voice, you can read it in his words. To Nick's point, if you're Ken Holland, your instinct is not to rush, get the lay of the land, don't rush into anything foolish, but are you up against it with the Connor McDavid factor?
No, you're not up against it. This is what I said when I came to Toronto. People are like, we haven't won a cup since 67. I said, well, I can't help you with any of that. My clock starts today. Your clock is, haven't been in the playoffs in 7 year, whatever it was. I said, I can only fix what happens from today on. Obviously, I didn't do it well enough, but that clock.
I'm going to talk to you about that.
Bobby Nicholson's clock and right now is, Kenny Holland's clock started yesterday. So I hate to say this publicly, but I kind of agree with a lot of what Nick said, which I seldom say. The number one thing for me is they postponed their amateur and pro scouting meetings so that the new GM could preside over them. So he's going to be in a conference room for 7, 8, 10 hours a day for 2 weeks, mm-hmm, with these two groups. So he's going to get a chance to evaluate all of them face-to-face. And he has the advantage of Kenny scouted a fair amount this year, so he knows a lot of these players. He just came back from the under-18. So if he's evaluating Jeff Merrick and Jeff Merrick's telling him about Ole Janssen from Färjestad, he knows Ole Janssen. Mm-hmm. So he's got a pretty good idea after talking to him. So this will be the evaluation period. Then I do expect him to make changes. Like Nicky said, I think optically he has to make a couple changes. There's a perception of the old guard and this and that. I think optically he needs to make a couple changes. Undoubtedly, he's got a couple of his own people anyway that he wants to bring in. Like I always brought Dave Nonis whenever I could.
Yep.
So that's the first thing. Get to know your staff, make some decisions, get ready for the draft. The most important thing he's got on his plate right now is get ready for the draft. Second would be cap decisions that are affected by the calendar. So if you have to buy out players by a certain date, you've got to make those decisions prior to July 1st. Third is what cap room you have, what are your targets on July 1st vis-a-vis free agency. And then fourth is the coach. And I don't feel urgency on the coach because there's only two other teams looking for a coach. And I think Kenny, with two of the best, you know, the best player in the world and one top 30 forward, Kenny can talk a coach into coming there pretty easily. So Kenny's not a young man, but he's not an old man. He's a youthful man, and he's a smart man. Like, I thought it was – I still do. I think it was a good hire. I think he'll do a good job there. And I think the next thing he does after he gets through all these minefields is he's got to sell some tickets. He's going to have to go out and talk to people in Edmonton. Like Nick said, they're angry there. They're angry about the failure, and he's got to go out and do some speaking and – tell him what his plan is and that things are going to be okay.
Here's the thing. I mean, Ken did talk about them thinking that they can make the playoffs next season. Mm-hmm. They have to play relevant games in March. They didn't play relevant games in March this year. They have to extend the calendar. And they did not do a good enough job of that this year, whether it was the swoon in December or the swoon in January. They have to make sure that when it comes to the end of March and we're talking about the last 2 weeks of the regular season, the Edmonton Oilers are in the discussion for a playoff position. That's key in all this. But now, the other two things that you touched on, two players, Yamamoto and Puljujarvi, both of them are coming off surgery. So you have to wonder whether it makes more sense for Yamamoto, who had wrist surgery, and Puljujarvi, who had the hip surgery. Is it better for them just to go to Bakersfield and do what Kenny Holland always talks about, overripen guys?
Nick.
I look at that roster, and unless there's a significant change, and, you know, we can always discuss that with a trade, I just don't see that lineup. If they are in a playoff position, John, it's by really overachieving and by getting spectacular goaltending that we assume would come from Koskinen. And I don't see that. Now, the other way you can look at it, and this might be the Brian Burke, where you make a significant trade early in your run, that's always an option for him. And if he does, then you got to look at your number one, two, and three up the middle in terms of McDavid, Draisaitl, and Nugent Hopkins. Those Nugent Hopkins to me is trade bait, but you know, would he ever think about keeping Nugent Hopkins and actually trading Draisaitl? What could you get for Draisaitl right now as a 50 goal scorer and a 100 point guy? Could you trade Draisaitl and get a top three defensemen, a top six winger, and maybe a top prospect and a pick? Could you get four significant pieces for what now is sold as maybe a top five, a top seven player in the league? That might be one way to go about it.
Well, I'm with you, Nikki. I don't see it unless they fly the team over to Lourdes and bathe in the holy waters at the shrine there. I don't see them as being able to do this. Now, Kenny can fix that or change that with a major trade, but I want to go back to something Shanny just said here. John said that about making the playoffs. So this is the tightrope. I spent 3 hours working on my press conference before I was announced as the GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs. See, the messaging has to be perfect, especially in the Canadian market. And what I heard Kenny say is, and Steve Yzerman did the same thing in Detroit, was we are measured by success by the playoffs, and that will always be our goal. It has to be front and center at all times. That's our goal, make the playoffs next year. But he didn't promise a thing, and they both said it's going to take time.
Oh, I didn't say he promised to make the playoffs.
The tightrope you walk is more like a clothesline. That's how narrow it is, where you want to tell people, we're going to get there. You got to believe in me.
But that's why
we'll get there.
That's why
it ain't happening tomorrow.
That's why relevancy in March, and having been there enough this season, relevancy in March is so vastly important for that team.
Because to make the playoffs, you got to knock somebody out that made it this year. And there's some pretty good teams that they would have to knock out to make it.
And there's pretty good teams that didn't make it, too. When you think the growth in Arizona.
Minnesota.
And Minnesota. I mean, Vancouver's on the rise. I mean, it's not getting easier in the West.
Yeah, hang on. I know that, you know, Brian may not have wanted to bite on this one. We'll see if you get the chompers out on this topic. Is there a Connor McDavid factor in all of this, considering the frustration, Nick?
I think Connor will be fine as long as he feels like there's growth, and he's a smart, intelligent kid. And if he sees it trending upward, I think he can live with even missing the playoffs again next year. But he needs to play with good players, and he needs to feel like between now and next March, if they're lucky enough to stay in a race, that he sees that growth. If that's the case, then he's going to have to, no matter how brilliant we know that he is, he's going to have to buy in with the rest of the program that slow and steady sometimes wins the race.
I tell you what, this is where Bob Nicholson, I truly believe, since the end of the season, has done a masterful job in continuing to communicate with Connor. And Connor has been fully abreast of everything that's gone on to make sure that the number one player understands where the growth is going to be. And I think Connor's fully on board.
On that, we got to wrap. Nick, always generous with your time. Great job last night.
Thanks, guys.
I know the feeling getting into two OTs. When is this one going to end? But excellent work, I know, into the wee hours last night. We look forward to another Game 7 tonight, Nick. Sharks and Avs, Hockey Central on at 8:30 Eastern.
Well, Jeffrey, all I can say is when I look over and I see Berkey nodding off, I'm thankful that I'm in really good shape and it doesn't affect me at all.
Over to you, Berkey, for comment.
I thought the panel was really good last night. I thought Elliot and Kelly were great.
Excellent on that little wrap. Thanks, Kipper. Good luck tonight. Have fun.
Have a good one.
The Sharks and the Avs, Game 7 tonight. Final thought on Ken Holland. It was the big news story across hockey circles last night, or yesterday rather, bleeding into today.
Kenny is just, he doesn't have an enemy in hockey. He's worked 30 years in hockey. He's like Jimmy Gregory. Mr. Gregory has no enemies. I have scores of them. And Kenny has no enemies. Like, you can't be in this business that long and have no enemies unless you're a great guy. Good hockey guy. He'll get this done there. I think this was a good hire.
The other thing, Jeff, I don't think you can underline enough that we're talking about a small market Canadian team that now has a big voice in the general manager's room. I mean, we're talking Ken Holland, a guy that is revered in that room. And when he comes up with an idea, other managers listen. And Edmonton now has a big voice at that table.
Do you think, though, to the previous point about the volcano needs a sacrifice in order to indicate to the marketplace that this will be different? Is Ken Holland?
You don't think Todd McLellan and Peter Chiarelli were sacrifices?
Well, no, I'm saying from Ken Holland's perch. Okay, like those two, like that was a huge deal last year. Obviously, firing the coach, firing the general manager, both in season. I get that. With the new general manager installed, does he feel any pressure? Is there an expectation that I've got to lob one in the volcano here just to show people this is going to be different?
No, because I don't think he would do that. I think he would value the people, but I don't. I think what you're saying is, do people expect and are they demanding change at the top because of this perceived old boys network? Mm-hmm. And the answer is yes. And I do predict he'll make changes, but it's more, not just optics, but more because I expect he wants to bring a couple guys with him. That's what these guys always do.
He talked about it yesterday. Culture is people. And there is a realization that some of the culture has to change, and so that means some of the people have to change.
On that, we'll wrap. Come back and preview Game 7 tonight in San Jose. It is the Sharks. It is the Avalanche. Nathan MacKinnon versus Logan Couture. 9 o'clock Eastern, CBC and Sportsnet. Hockey Central at noon continues on Sportsnet 590. The Fan simulcast on Sportsnet and the NHL Network.
Good show, good podcast. Subscribe to podcasts of Good Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590. The Fan on demand. Now more Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
NHL Awards this year from Mandalay Bay Event Center in Las Vegas, June 19th. And we have a host, Emmy Award-winning actor Kenan Thompson of SNL, will be the host on Wednesday, June 19th. Known, of course, from Saturday Night Live and the Knuckle Puck Guy from Mighty Ducks. So there's your latest on the NHL Awards. Kenan Thompson is your host.
So I was working for the Minnesota North Stars for the 3 days that they shot all the hockey scenes at the old Met Center in the original movie with Gordon Bombay.
Yes, of course. Now, that would have been
1991 or 92.
Were Norm Green's dogs around?
I have no comment on the owner at that point, sir.
I was always waiting for that. What's the quickest way to grab a lemon is to bring up, Okay, tonight, another Game 7. Last night, great one. Tonight, we'll see. Sharks and Avalanche Game 7. This one is in San Jose. Sharks have been really good at home. John mentioned Nathan MacKinnon off the top of the program. Berkey, what do you expect tonight?
Well, I am going to disagree with John, and actually that seldom happens because I have great
respect for him. That's the first time ever.
I think San Jose... And I don't know who's going to win. I've had no feel in this series. I really, this is the weirdest playoff I've ever been around because in several series, including last night, I didn't have a strong feeling. So right before someone said, all right, you have to pick a team, I said, I got $5 on St. Louis. So I win. No one's paid yet, by the way. To me, watching him, watching Nathan MacKinnon, this is his breakout season. Like, we all know how good he's been, but the average fan doesn't realize or has not realized till this point how explosive and dangerous and exciting and interesting he is. He's really fun to watch. He's Connor McDavid speed, but with a, you know, he's an 18-wheeler and Connor's kind of a drag car. And this kid's a big, strong kid. He's got way more power than Connor. But he tore Calgary apart. And I think San Jose's done a really good job of containing him.
Vlasic's done a great job on it.
And so, but they're taking away the he can't get any speed through the neutral zone. They're ganging up on him. They're taking the middle of the ice away from him and forcing him up one lane so Vlasic can deal with him. Their game plan for negating him has been exceptional. Now, the question mark for me is if Joel Pavelski comes back, because there's persisting rumors he's going to come back. If he does, that's an X factor for them. A guy who's missed that many games, like 7-8 playoff games, probably not a factor player-wise other than on the power play, probably a little rusty, but what a boost to their team. I'm not sure how that's going to go, but to me, they've done a good job of negating MacKinnon, and that's why they're in a game 7.
I would suggest that the faster the game is, mm-hmm. the better chance the Avalanche have to win.
I agree.
Or can win.
I agree.
And
I agree.
So a guy like MacKinnon is going to have to will his way through. The other guy I'm concerned about from an Avalanche perspective after that is Rantanen. After that body check he took and how that Charlie horse is or was or will be. That to me is a big part of this. But like when the Avalanche get going and they get their speed going, like guys like Joe Thornton becomes ineffective. You know, we talked about the Blues and puck possession. When the Sharks control the puck, you know, it's a different game. But when the Avalanche are using their speed and being effective, it changes the whole personality.
The interesting thing to me about this series has been, and this may sound, obvious when I say it, but bear with me for a sec, guys. In each of the games, the best team has won. And I look at last night's St. Louis and Dallas game. Like, if Jamie Benn scores in that wraparound last night and Dallas goes on to win, can you honestly say that Dallas was the better team in last night's game? No. St. Louis was, but Dallas won.
Cogliano had an equally good chance, too.
100%. He had Faxa had one on the blocker save.
Sure.
Like, there were a number of Dallas Stars players that had a chance. Yeah, they did have some
That's why we have to shout out to Binnington for having a pretty good game in the shadow of Ben Bishop.
100%. But the point that I want to make about this Colorado-San Jose series has been every single game the best team has won, and that doesn't always happen.
I agree with that. The team that has won in this series has outplayed its opponent that night, those 60 minutes. Mm-hmm. I agree with that for sure.
What do you think, John?
I can't disagree, but I think that, you know, as a learning curve, and Brian knows this, he's seen players on his rosters grow through series, and then they're that much better the next year. To me, I'm seeing so much growth in the Avalanche. This is their next test, because next year we're expecting huge things out of the Avalanche, but you have to go over this hurdle tonight, right now. This is a night where Jared Bednar, it's simple for him. Guys, we play our game, we win. And I really believe that. If they play their speed game, the Avalanche win in San Jose tonight.
And the San Jose veteran presence scares me. I would agree with that, except that I think it's not. They seem to, when they apply themselves, because I think you're right, when they apply themselves, they seem to be able to negate Nathan MacKinnon. And the one adjustment Bednar might make is start stretching and start trying to get out on some lucky bounces, and they might adjust and start stretching. But up till now, San Jose, they're a veteran team. They've been there before. They seem to know how to negate this at home in particular.
But dare I remind everybody, they were down 3-0 in the third period in Game 7 in their own building until the call.
The call, yeah.
I mean, so it's possible. And Vegas was out skating them. Vegas was neutralizing everything that the Sharks were doing in that Game 7.
They were in control. Yeah.
Absolutely. So that to me, this to me is one of those ones where you say, I think San Jose's ripe for the picking tonight. I think they're ripe for the picking.
Okay, here becomes the question. Regardless of who wins and who loses tonight, same question for both teams. If Colorado loses, here's the question. Is that enough? If San Jose loses, is that enough? Essentially what I'm asking you guys is, what was your expectation of both these teams going into these playoffs? And has one or both of these teams met it?
John Tortorella is not answering this question.
He's not down with questions like that.
Listen, this is gravy for the Avalanche. Absolute, utter, good old fashioned roast beef gravy. This is bonus time. This is going to be hard on the Sharks when you consider what do you do with Erik Karlsson. I mean, is this their chance this year? Did Doug Wilson mortgage the future for this year?
I think that's spot on. I think Colorado, it's not just they've overachieved.
You can't agree with me all the time, Berkey.
Well, I know. It's a new day here. I had to agree with Nikki, too, which is really annoying.
This is what are you?
Someone check the moon.
I was going to say, I know it's legal in Canada now, but.
What was that cookie you were eating before the show,
just,
Brian?
I'm just basically generally a cheerful person.
Mr. Mellow in the middle here.
To me, it's the Colorado story is what they had to do to get in. Yeah. So it was kind of a Cinderella story that they're even in the playoffs. Then they smoke a really good team, and now they're in a game seven. So it's gravy. They're playing with house money, whatever cliche you want to use. I like the gravy one better. But the fact is, and what's got Colorado fans excited is what's coming.
Yes.
You see Makar come in. They got 19 million draft picks. They got this guy coming, that guy coming. Like, Joe Sakic's done a marvelous job of loading up the pipeline. So, no, if you're a Colorado fan, you're gonna cheer this team on. The game's in San Jose, but you're going to watch the game in the arena tonight and cheer and be happy and say, that was a good investment, my season tickets.
The one guy I'm really happy for in San Jose, though, who I think has saved his season, is Martin Jones.
Big time.
I think Absolutely. That halfway through that Vegas series, we were all thinking, where's Aaron Dell? And then all of a sudden, something happened, and we saw Martin Jones that played the way to the Stanley Cup final a few years back. And that, to me, that's a positive, because this guy's a good goaltender.
And again, John said that he thinks San Jose is ripe for the picking. I'm going to go the other way and say I think San Jose is going to find a way to win this game, largely because – their scheme is good. Peter DeBoer has put in a good scheme on how to contain these guys. And second is Martin Jones.
You know, I had a conversation on ice.
By the way, that's
this year.
The only reason he's saying this is because his buddy is the president of the Sharks, John Tortora, who we both worked with at the National Hockey League. You're just trying to be nice to Tortora.
He's a good guy.
I see.
But I like all the people involved. The good thing about this one is the cool thing about my job now is I like almost all the people that I have to talk about. Like Doug Wilson. I've known Doug Wilson for 20 years. He's a great guy. He's done a great job. If they win, I'll be happy. Joe Sakic, is there a classier guy? So I got no dog in this fight vis-a-vis the personalities. I like both coaches. Jared Bednar, to me, looks like a coach.
Oh, yeah.
Like if you're doing a movie and you wanted to cast a guy as a head coach, you'd hire him. He's a great guy. So it's not that. It's I am the chess match that's gone on. And their ability to have the last change, I think San Jose can find a way to do it.
By the way, to Brian's point, I watched McClintock on Turner Classic Movies the other night.
Yes.
I thought I swore I saw Bednar in the back. I really do. I thought I saw him in the background there behind John Wayne.
This is sad. I watched part of that, too. I'm watching movies that John Shannon watches. I got to go see somebody.
Well, you know, you're a lot older than me.
So. Really quickly, circle back to the top story. We got 60 seconds left in the show. Circle back to the top story of the day. Congratulations to the St. Louis Blues. The defeat in double overtime, the Dallas Stars. I know you mentioned Dallas and, you know, give the losers the good goodbye. But your thoughts on St. Louis and what we just saw. We got about 30 seconds, Brian.
Well, I'll take half of it and John can have the rest. This is a remarkable story because where they started from on January 3rd to where they are now is unbelievable.
Petrangelo, Beaumeister, Parayko, Edmondson, Dunn, Bertuzzo. Pretty good blue line. That's why they're there. Where they are.
You know what? And you talk about Colorado with players coming and picks and all that. St. Louis is doing all this, and Jordan Kyrou, who the minute he steps on the ice for St. Louis, instantly becomes the fastest player on that team, is still on the horizon. Congratulations to Craig Berube and the St. Louis Blues. They will face off against the winner of the Sharks and the Avs. That is Game 7 tonight in San Jose on CBC and Sportsnet. Hockey Central at 8:30.